You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 4 November. U.S. vehicle sales expected later today, 15.6 million, down from 15.8 million. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha. Week ahead, U.S. elections, FOMC, Bank of England. It's going to be wild. Keith McLachlan from Integral Asset Management. Some very niche offshore stocks, for example, biscuit makers out of Belgium. And then Sello Sekela, ABSA CIB economist. October PMI slightly down on September, but still above 50, which says things are still expanding. Good for rates and consumers. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: growth in global digital assets cannot be ignored. And of course, that means tax authorities want their cut from gains made on these assets. Business Day: Botswana's new president aims to clinch De Beers diamond sales pact. He says he wants to engage the other party in proper negotiations as soon as possible. Morning markets: US is green, S&P up 0.4, NASDAQ up 0.7%. East, mostly green, Sydney's up 0.2%. Tokyo is closed for Culture Day. Hong Kong is up 0.2, and the only red there is 10 cent off a tenth of a percent. Commodities, mostly green. Gold is your red, 2,751. Brent, 74.14. Platinum, 1,007. Palladium, 1,121. Rand, 17.52. Bitcoin, 69,000. Top 40 opening call. Red open, 180 points or a quarter of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Muyaha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Economic data this week, but I think it's all going to be overshadowed by the fact that the US goes to the polls tomorrow. There's been a lot of early voting. Some 50 plus million have voted already. But of course, tomorrow's the big day. By this time, Wednesday, we won't have a winner. We'll probably have a moaner and lots of debate and volatility. The market, we're not going to get the surprise we got in 2016, but there certainly could be, I suspect, some volatility, perhaps particularly in sort of like the safe havens, gold and dollars.
Yeah, morning, Simon. We're definitely going to see volatility without a doubt. I think just purely because you're dealing with candidates that are on two opposing sides of economic decisions, especially when you think about some of the decisions that will follow. I mean, this could potentially be one of the last rates conversations that we get from Fed Chair Jerome Powell if the 47th president of the United States is Donald Trump and Jerome Powell doesn't cut rates as Donald Trump has done or has said he wants him to. So there's a lot that's at stake in this particular election. We know that from the Democratic camp and the Harris camp, there were conversations at some point about hiking taxation on big corporations, which big corporations wouldn't really like. Donald Trump holds an opposing view to that. So there's a lot of opposing views on policy, on direction, on economic growth, and how the U.S. will shape up after that. So I think without a doubt, as we start to get the results, markets will start to price this in more and more. Might not be today. It might probably be from tomorrow onwards or from Wednesday, as you mentioned. But we'll certainly see a change or a shift depending on which way the election goes. Because regardless of which way the result is, we're going to see a new president who is not the current president.
Actually, that's the thought I hadn't had, of course. I mean, Biden's just not on the ticket. Sure, Kamala Harris is his VP, but not on the ticket at all. We've also got, you mentioned Jerome Powell, we've got the FOMC, we've got the Bank of England. Both are expected for quarter percent rate cuts this week. I mean, it almost kind of pales into the background and kind of just like, well, yeah, we're in the rate cutting cycle. This is what we expect from our central bankers.
Yeah, so when I think this is probably the first and potentially the last time in history, for a while at least, where you've got such big economic events happening out of the U.S. in the same week. We've always put a lot of emphasis on the FOMC minutes and the rate cuts and that conversation, but I think without a shadow of a doubt, this week all eyes are on the U.S. elections. It's been a very, very busy election year all around throughout the world, with Botswana having wrapped up their elections just recently as well. But when we look at the key election points, I mean, Russia had an election this year, China did, South Africa did, and now with the US wrapping things up, it's obviously something that we had kind of anticipated from the start of the year, but that week is finally here. We've been building up to it for months now, and it seems as though interest rate conversations are completely irrelevant at this point. But again, it's to see the direction that this conversation takes, because when we look at the US picture, there have been a lot of indicators that have said that we will head into a recession. Sell-offs have been happening. We've seen a lot of risk coming in and out of the market at various times. And then we had conversations around soft landings and the fact that the US has been able to achieve a soft landing. So I think at this point, the markets are hoping for business as usual on the interest rate side of things, but are alive to the fact that it could really go either way. We could really come out of that election and go into the interest rate conversation, and that conversation would be sort of the softest conversation we have this week.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten all those elections, of course. I mean, it was something like, I think, 60%, 70% of the world's GDP. We've had the UK, we've had India, bunches of them, France, and now finally, as you say, the US one is coming. Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst, and that's our question today. LinkedIn and Twitter, are you expecting a volatile week as the US votes? Have your vote, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, CIO at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. There are tens of thousands of stocks listed across the world. I'm always, truthfully, sometimes just amazed at what some of them are and how niche they are. One that you hold in your offshore AMC is Lotus Bakeries, a Belgium company founded in 1932. And to be perfectly blunt, they make biscuits, yet they make them immensely well and immensely profitably, which is just, I mean, I suppose, patently, there's money in biscuits. Who knew?
Morning, Simon. Absolutely. I mean, just to think about it conceptually, what makes a really, really good business is a simple, replicable process that you can scale massively and has got some degree of pricing power and a large total addressable market. Biscuits is that. It's you're producing a largely an homogenous product, and you can scale the factories, you can scale the volumes, you can open up new geographies. You just got to have a really good biscuit. And they do. Their biscuit's almost a century old at this point. What they've done over the last, and by the way, it's worth noting that the original family still controls the business and in fact runs it. I think we're in the third or fourth generation now of the family running the business. And it's growing at 20-odd percent on top line, and that trickles all the way down to the bottom line. Where EPS is growing about 21%. Volumes in last period was 16% up. How have they done this? Well, as they've replicated and grown the volumes of biscuits sold, they've done that into new geographies, new markets. They've expanded the product range gently sideways into, for example, spreads and ice creams. Mm-hmm. And they've stepped into, for example, healthy snacking food. So they're really a confectionery and snacking company, kind of, you know, like the big daddy on the block in terms of this is Mondelez, but you also have, say, Pepsi and Coke that have this. If you think about Coke's formula was so one product that's universally demanded really, really, really well everywhere. And that's exactly what Lotus Bakeries has done. And then from there, they grow out. But you're getting such great returns on capital at that point that you can self-fund.
And it Biscoff Cookies is the one most folks will recognize, yes. the brand. I like what you say there. It's that it's the lack of complexity, I suppose, that actually makes them so incredibly successful. And brand, I mean, brand is the big one. And you go to Coke. I mean, Coke was, you know, there are many ways I can get a cool drink, but there's only one Coke. And Pepsi's tried, and there's still only one Coke. Brand is perhaps the other key ingredient to that simplicity in the process.
Oh, definitely. I mean, in the intangible aspect of the fact that when we are saying Biscoff, probably over half of the listeners know exactly what brand we're talking about. In fact, one of Biscoff's regional manufacturing plants is in South Africa. So they've really, really, really done well to get the brand recognized, known, out there, consistent, and the like. And from that, from that intangible kind of backbone, you can launch quite a bit. But stepping back to your statement about simple, what is underappreciated is that as a business gets bigger, there is a returns to scale that happens. Mm. But quietly in the background, there's something called the complexity curve that ramps up as well. And a complexity curve is a cost. You want simple businesses, generally speaking, to generate better returns on capital than complex businesses. So at some point, the complexity curve ramps up faster than returns to scale, and in fact, deadens that returns to scale. That's why really, really, really big businesses tend to be complicated and in fact become mature and start to become too complex, and therefore start to actually, their returns start to go backwards. Lotus is managing to avoid that by sticking very much to its knitting. So at the center, sell the Biscoff biscuit everywhere.
100%, take you on that. And I like the view of that curve between simple and complex. The other that you've got in the fund is Sprouts Farmers Market. My sense is they're kind of like a food lovers that we would know in South Africa. This is, again, a niche US retailer, but it's kind of doing retail almost the old school way. And yes, there are supply chains and efficiencies, but it's finding its niche and sort of sticking to its knitting.
So the way I'd phrase it is food lovers market is like Sprouts in South Africa. They largely modeled in the same thing, and I think Sprouts came long before them. It's called the theater of food. So when you walk in, as opposed to a Checkers or a Pick and Pay that has aisle shopping, you walk into a Sprouts and you can see from one corner to the other corner, and there's piles of colorful fruit and vegetables. Mm. And so it looks like a theater. It looks wonderful to walk through it. But yes, I mean, to your point, Sprouts has got a little over 400 stores. 70% of its products are attribute driven, meaning, you know, vegetarian, vegan, gluten free, things like that, and more exotic. So very, very much focused on fresh produce, attribute driven foods, focused on theater of food, and then about the final, perhaps not so obvious element, is that they have direct from farmer fresh supply chain. Mm-hmm. So even someone like Amazon that comes in, you know, you can buy a lot of things. It's very hard to buy fresh. It's very hard to rebuild fresh, because those are daily, if not minute by minute, supply chains that are running 24/7. But Sprouts has done a fantastic job of, because at the start of COVID, there was a new CEO that came in. They were trying to compete with the Amazons and the like by going for volume and having lots of discount. And he redesigned it. He said, no. We're a niche. We're focused. Mm-hmm. We're attribute-driven, full price. This is not discount. Make sure the food is good. Make sure the food is fresh. Stores. So their latest stores they're rolling out iterations are, in fact, smaller. And they're managing to get the same sales out of smaller stores, so therefore the economics are better, your trading density is better. And this is a company that's really cleaned up its focus, doubled down on what it's done, and it's shooting lights out. It's comparable store sales in Q3 24. Remember, when the consumer is under pressure in America, their like-for-like comparable store sales was up 8.4%.
Wow.
You know, that's That's in US dollars. That's something that ShopRite would give their left leg to achieve. Really, really great, great result from Sprouts.
Theatre of food. I like that phrase. And it is. You walk into a food lover's theatre of food. Keith McLachlan, CIO, Integral Asset Management. Always appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Silo Sekele, ABSA CIB economist. So I appreciate the early morning time. PMI data for October came out late morning on Friday, slightly down on September, but at 52.6, still above that important 50 level, and therefore still showing expansionary. And importantly, 2 months above 50 in a row, which is the first time in what, almost since the beginning of last year, we've had 2+50 months. Good news for our economy. Good news for consumers.
Good morning to you, Simon, and your listeners. Yes, the overall results here are positive. As you said, although the PMI came down a bit on a month-on-month basis, but it's still saying, you know, business conditions in the manufacturing sector continue to expand. So that's good news for the sector and the economy wide. But it's more good news, or it will be more good news, if this is sustained.
I take your point on that. I mean, the more plus 50 months we can clock up, the better we do. Strong business activity, that comes in at 55.6. I was going back in time, just August, which was, you know, this is the October number. So August was only 2 months before. It was at 40. That really shows a significant swing and shows a key, I suppose, a reversal in an important part of our economy. That activity really matters, and it's showing good expansion. Data.
Yeah, it does. And what's interesting here is that business activity tends to track, you know, output in the sector quite well. So if this index continues to show some expansion, then you would expect output to continue to rise. With that said, it means that you would expect output to rise in September and also start Q4 on a good footing, which is, you know, which would be a good reading for GDP overall.
Yeah, outflowing into GDP. Employment improving, but still below that 50. I would suspect maybe, and I'm the complete novice here, so correct me if wrong, that employment probably does lag a little bit. You're doing better on the factory floor, but you're going to try and not add staff until you absolutely need them. Is that a fair assessment? Employment will, in a sense, catch up if we continue to see good business activity.
In fact, I don't want to say it's a fair assessment. I want to say it's the best assessment, right? Because before anyone thinks of, you know, increasing payrolls, they want to see activity being sustained, right? Then that's when they can expand their payroll. So the employment index has been quite subdued for some time, because if you look at the PMI, it has been yo-yoing between, you know, maybe below 50 and above 50 for some time. So that's what I'm saying. We need, you know, a sustained period where business conditions continue to expand in the sector. Then that's when you'll see employment in the sector also starting to pick up.
And last question, good news for inflation outlook. The purchasing price index, lowest since 2018. We've had some good inflation data prints. We had a really good PPI number last week. We really are looking at inflation being, you know, in the right space, and certainly below that 4.5 that the governor talks about. Positive news on inflation as well.
Yeah, so it's positive news. In fact, look, inflation now is a tailwind, right, from a headwind. So because purchasing price index tracks well PPI data, it bodes well for consumer prices, because we know that PPI precedes CPI. So it means that the overall inflationary pressures in the economy are likely to be contained. Now, with that happening, right, the question is no longer if interest rates are coming down. The question is how big will be the cuts. So that's a good space to be in.
Yeah, and from your lips to the governor and MPCs. Gents, it's no longer whether it's coming down, it's how much it's coming down. So, hello, Sekele, Absa CIB economist, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth on Friday, talking about the AB InBev update. Beer volumes heading lower. We asked if it's because beer is perhaps just old school. Over half of you said, no, there's still plenty of beer drinkers. Almost a third said that it's not the problem, it's not beer. It's that AB InBev is old school. The rest said, yep, we are drinking exotics. We no longer drink beer. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Masekla, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Redefine results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.